The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
What I love about rental properties is that there's so many different strategies and so many different ways that you can make money with rental properties. And my guests on the podcast today have done something that is very different from anyone else that we've talked to. What they've done is they have turned a rental property into a hostel. So instead of renting the property out on a one-year lease, and instead of doing Airbnb and renting out bedrooms by the night, they've put multiple beds in a bedroom, and they're renting out actual beds. So they have capacity for up to 30 people to stay in their rental property every night. So every night, they have up to 30 people paying them to live in that property. So just off the volume, they're making ridiculous cash flow off this property. They're doing really well with it. So I want to figure out what they're doing and how they're making this work. So let's take a real quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come back and we'll meet Alina and Joe from Providence, Rhode Island. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified. And I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E. lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. Are you looking for actionable steps to create wealth and passive income? As a top-ranked business and investing podcast with over 800 five-star reviews, the Passive Real Estate Investing Show is packed with strategies and insight for putting money in your pocket. Marco Santarelli from Narada Real Estate Investments brings his expertise and knowledge on both passive and turnkey real estate investing, and he provides listeners with helpful tools and tips to create the wealth you've always wanted. Head over to iTunes or Google Play today and subscribe to Passive Real Estate Investing Podcast, or visit PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. That's PassiveRealEstateInvesting.com. Hey, Joe and Alina, welcome to the podcast. So why don't we start with you kind of telling us or describing to us what your business looks like today?
I am Alina. I'm one of the two partners. And right now we have four houses in Providence, one of which is run as a hostel. And Joe has one house separately for me.
In Providence as well, but we also have one building in Boston. But that's
Yours. That's just yours.
Okay. And so you guys are business partners. You're not married. You're not dating. Like, this is purely you guys are friends that run this business.
Yes. And roommates. We happen to live together, but we are not romantic partners.
Okay.
We have other romantic partners that are not ourselves.
Now, what I think is awesome about your business is that this is your full-time job. So you guys don't have other jobs. You have just a couple of properties and they generate enough revenue that you're able to support yourself and run these businesses, right?
Yes, and save money too.
That is really, really incredible. And you do a lot of traveling too. Like, you guys are both world travelers.
That's why we got into real estate. We wanted the flexibility to control our own hours and do fun things. Which is what makes life worth living.
And even a place to live, because, you know, we're living in our own buildings as well.
Right. Now, the hostel, first of all, before we talk about what you're doing, for anyone that doesn't know, describe what a hostel is.
Well, a hostel is mostly for travelers, backpackers, we call them. And these are people that are on trips that are like extended trips. They're not going just for like a weekend, although some of those people stay with us as well. But our primary audience are traveling for 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years. We've even met people that are doing it for 4 years and longer even.
So it's for independent travelers mostly.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's really a budget accommodation. And normally they share a room with four or five other travelers.
Who they've never met before.
Yeah, they've never met before. And they even become friends as they're, you know, sharing the space. And we have really a common kitchen, a common living area, common restrooms and stuff.
All the bathrooms are shared.
Right.
And that's what brings the cost down. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the bedrooms are shared is also what brings the cost down.
And there's cooking facilities, and that brings the cost down for the travelers, because as they're staying for a whole week or something, they don't want to go out every single time, spend $50 on food.
So it's really cheap for the traveler, and then it's really profitable to you because you're getting so much revenue for each room. You've got four people in one room.
Because it's a volume.
Right. Right. Yeah. So how many people would you say are staying at the house at any one time?
Well, gosh, it is quite seasonal, I will say that. Right. We have capacity for about 30 because we do have two properties that we run like this. So one has about 20 capacity and the other has about 10.
Okay.
And now, they're one block from each other.
What do the neighbors think about this? Like, do the neighbors have any problems with so many people coming and going all the time?
So we also ran one in New York and a few in New York and now two in Providence. And I will say that depends on your neighbors. So we've been in the current place where we're in, our neighbors love us. The house was previously a drug dealer's house.
Okay.
It is in an area that is underdeveloped of Providence. And so I feel that we're bringing a positive change because we're bringing all of these international travelers that would otherwise not really come to this particular neighborhood.
Right.
In New York City, we had neighbors that were very adamantly against what we were doing at one of our locations and created all sorts of problems for us. So it can depend.
So what did you do? Like, so the neighbors against you and you've got this business that's up and running. Like, how did you deal with them or get them to?
Ultimately, we sold the house. That was 2 years later.
Okay.
But in the beginning, we tried to just trudge through it, and they were constantly calling complaints to the DOB.
And we would get fines, and we'd pay the fines, and we would trudge on.
And we tried to make friends with them, but I think they were already set against us. We learned after the fact, and they got other neighbors against us too. We learned after the fact that they had wanted to buy that house.
Okay.
So they already had a chip on their shoulders.
Yeah. Now, what about finding people to stay at the hostel? Like, how do you market it or how do you attract guests?
So I do software engineering before I was an investor. And we have a website. We list ourselves on other, like, you know, kind of accommodation sites. Yeah, booking sites. And we're on the maps and people just find us naturally because the kind of audiences that we have.
Okay.
These are the people that seek out certain things.
Joe downplays his software engineer side, but he made really great SEO, search engine optimization, for our website. So when you search Providence Hostel, we're pretty much one of the top listings that shows up. And we get about 50% of the bookings are through our direct site, which makes a huge difference because all of the booking sites take a commission.
Right.
So when you speak with other hostels, they're not getting 50% of the bookings through their own site. They're having to pay commissions to booking sites.
Now, does it take a lot of time to deal with the bookings? And I'm sure that people maybe have questions before they book. So you're maybe responding to emails and then checking that volume of people in, like, does it become kind of a full-time job that you're always dealing with stuff?
So it used to, because we didn't have like a good system to manage all the reservations that were coming in and email communications and even like input it in our kind of like accountant system and stuff. So we've recently switched to a new system that kind of handles everything like this automatically for us. And that takes a lot of time away, you know, from us having to do it. And also we have staff to help us out. Some volunteer staff. We're looking for a manager right now. So we have people to help us check guests in.
So how do you get a volunteer staff? Like how does that work?
Beautifully, in fact. So there are three main websites, workaway.info, worldpackers.com, and HelpX. And these are people, most of our volunteers are foreigners from Europe. They, you know, a lot of people want to experience the U.S., not just as a tourist, but live here for a month, maybe two, and get to feel like a local. Mm-hmm. So these sites connect people who want to live in the U.S. with hosts like us, who are willing to offer free accommodation, sometimes free food. And in exchange, you get them to do some hours for you. And it's beautiful because they get to work on their English. They get to experience America for a little bit longer. And we get very fascinating people that are very international.
Yeah. And Americans too, because now it's becoming more popular in America.
Oh, yeah. Wow. So you'll train them that like they're going to maybe check people in or do cleaning or the different tasks that you need done around the house?
Mostly just those two.
Okay. And so you don't pay them anything. You're just letting them live there for free and then they volunteer to work for you?
Correct. We don't pay them money, but they are compensated in that they get a free place.
Right.
A free place to do laundry. And some of our volunteers, the American ones who have a work permit, actually, we require very few hours from them. They actually can work, each volunteer can work just 2.5 days a week.
Okay.
So a lot of them have jobs in addition to this, the ones who have a work permit, that is. Mm-hmm. And it works beautifully for them because they don't have to worry about paying rent. They can kind of experience Providence for just a few months without worrying about committing to a place for a year, as a lot of leases may
require. Yeah, I mean, that seems like it works out well for everybody. That's great. Now, another thing that you guys do is, so you've got some properties that you rent out rooms, that so it's not a hostel where it's more transient. You might have people that maybe stay for a month or a couple of months.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and the hostel dovetails very nicely with
that. So tell me about this. So so people come to the hostel and you're kind of like almost testing them out to see if they would maybe be good for a longer term stay.
And we don't tell them.
So talk me through this. How does this work?
Sure. So a lot of the guests who come through are not tourists. They are people looking to move to Providence. Providence has five great universities, one of which is Brown, an Ivy League, RISD, a top art and design school. So a lot of people come here to work at one of these universities, do research here, move here.
The hospital here.
For the hospital as well. We got a lot of med students on rotation. And so they need a place where they're going to live their first few days as they're looking for housing. So a lot of people end up staying with us because we're pretty much the cheapest option in Providence. And then we get to kind of see how they behave. We also ask our staff, hey, how is Jen? Is she giving you any problems? Is she doing her dishes? Because all of that tells you about a person's character. You know, someone who leaves dishes mm-hmm. in the sink might be someone not very considerate. And they know, the staff knows that we do have some other places where we could put them as regular rentals. If they give us good information, good feedback on the person, we say, hey, Jen, we know you're looking for housing. Just to let you know, we may have some options for you. And then we show them, you know, what we have available. And they can become a regular tenant.
Wow. Now, do you do that? Like have them, like so, and this would be like a month-to-month situation?
Yeah.
Okay. So do you do month to month versus getting someone on a yearly lease because you can charge more by the month?
It is true that you can charge more, but it is also true that the younger generation, you know, they hesitate to like commit for a whole year.
Okay.
Even myself, you know, like if you ask me, are you going to live here for a whole year when I was in my 20s, I'd be like, I don't know. Do
right.
I have to commit?
Right.
And I might end up living there for 3 years, but I just like flexibility knowing that I'm month
right.
to month.
Okay. Okay.
So we've had students month to month who stay with us for like 2-3 years.
And it's fully furnished, right? So they, you've got the dresser, the bed, the couches, like everything is totally there. So they just bring their clothes and their stuff and they're moving in, right?
Fully furnished, except for one of our houses, which is just regular rental.
Okay.
Right.
Now, do you find that it's maybe less profitable? I mean, because obviously you're not having four people in the room, but it's maybe less work because you're not constantly turning over?
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Okay. Awesome. Now, where do you guys live? Like, do you live at the hostel or at one of the other rentals?
We used to live at the hostel in New York. In fact, we were not just living at the hostel. We were living in the dorms. Right. Whatever bed was available.
Okay.
For about a year, we were moving around.
For about a year. Yeah. Hitting beds. And you know what? It was fun. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I know to some of my American friends that sounds, hell. And then in Providence, in the beginning, we were living in our own hostel. We had like our own room. And then when we acquired another house, we moved to that one so that we could grow the hostel and give up.
Okay. So you live at a house, like you don't live with your tenants at all. It's just a house that you guys live in.
At this point, we would happily live with our tenants, but Providence used to be very cheap, and it used to be that you could find multifamilies very cheap, and then it became that the prices went up, so we found a great deal on a single family, and we snatched it up.
Okay. Now, what about in the hostel, like, you get a lot of drama when you have 10 people staying at a property. What, you've got different personality types, different people have different expectations. Do you have any problems getting people to get along?
Well, sometimes there are problems, and we ask the problem people to leave, or we don't extend them if they want to stay longer. But 95% to, I would say, 98% of the time, people are hassle-free, and they're friendly, and they get along well with all the others. And, you know, it's a community that we provide.
Well, I don't want to rose color it. With some of the issues we've had a drug dealer stay with us who we didn't know. You know, you discover these after the fact. We've had a drug addict stay with us who we didn't know. We discover after the fact. So we have had issues. The important thing is but they are rare. The important thing is to be on your toes. Be selective in how you choose your staff if you're not there. You know, make sure your staff knows to be discerning. So it does require more hands-on, but it's well worth it because the people who are great are just phenomenal people.
Right. Is there a way to screen those people out? Like, is there any kind of, maybe if someone is living locally, like that might be someone that is maybe exactly transient. Right. Is that kind of something you're looking for?
Yeah. Exactly. And we do screen. We don't allow people that are in the city that are like,
you must have an out of state ID.
Okay. Okay. So you're making sure that they're travelers or they're just moving to the area.
Right. And we don't allow people that have no credit cards and they're just like, oh, I'll just pay you cash and I don't want a credit card on file, or I don't even have a credit card.
Oh, okay.
If someone's dodgy, we tell them that you need a passport to check in.
Right.
Okay.
Because a lot of times the dodgier people who don't have much to their name will not own a passport.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and they need a credit card. So you're not taking cash. Like, it's your payments are only by credit card.
We accept cash, but we keep a credit card on file.
Okay.
Just our incidentals or things like that.
And then if they show up, we've trained our staff. If someone shows up and they're, you know, like they have garbage bags as luggage, to tell them we're full.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
We tell them if you would not want to share a room or the house with someone, you have the ability to turn them away.
Yeah. Yeah. So how does that work? I mean, you get someone that is maybe planning on staying there, but you can just tell like this isn't someone we want in the house. Does that ever lead to a problem when you're turning someone away that was maybe planning on staying there for the night?
They can be a little bit annoyed, but they understand that if we're full, I can't make beds.
Okay. Okay.
In there. So ultimately they leave. They can be a little disgruntled. But
Is the business seasonal? Like, is it maybe, okay. So the summertime is your busy time?
Yes, yeah. Summertime. Yeah. Now is not, you know, fall
it's still busy,
can
actually,
be,
very
can
busy,
be
yes.
decent. Late spring can be okay, mm-hmm. but late fall is dwindling, winter mm-hmm. quite low, and early spring quite low.
Yeah, I'd say between March and the end of November would be, you know, we have plenty of guests, not maybe not full every day, but, you know, depends on the month.
But I'll be honest with you, I don't mind that because it forces us to have time off and to mm-hmm. go and do our own traveling right. and to enjoy life, which yeah. is why I got into this.
Uh-huh. Right. Now, when you guys travel, when you're not there, and you know, there's a lot of moving parts to this business, do you just have to make sure that you have a really good volunteer that's going to be there, that they're not going to leave, that they're going to keep things moving?
Yeah. So in the past in New York, we had a manager and she was paid and she was actually paid quite well because she was phenomenal. She's still a great friend of mine. And in Providence, we're looking to hire a manager. What we've done here also is Joe and I take turns. So last winter, he went away for a month traveling to Vietnam, where he's from. And then I went away when he got back for 3 months traveling to Romania and volunteering there. Because that's where I'm from.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's really great. I mean, you guys, it seems like you've got a great partnership. And let me ask you this as we kind of wrap things up. You know, I think there's a lot of value in having a partner. Like you can almost get twice as much work done, but it doesn't always work out. Is there any advice that you could give to people that want to get into a partnership?
Two, for me, and then I'll let Joe answer, mm-hmm. two very important things. One is make sure trust. Trust is one of the key things. If you don't trust your partner, you don't have a basis to start on. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I think makes our partnership work so well, because we trust each other blindly and have been in partnership for 12 years, is that you should have a very similar relationship to money and spending. Like if one of you is really a saver and the other one's really a spender, that's going to be hard, I think, even in a marriage, but also in a partnership. Joe, right. What would you say?
And I would second that, you know, you should be in a similar financial, you know,
oh, yes.
situation, or at least spending habits, because I've had a different partnership with other friends that don't work out.
So we've each had partnerships that didn't work.
Right.
Because the other, and that was also with a friend, it didn't work out because we had different goals and different views on finances and spending and stuff like that. So definitely you should be kind of on aligned financially. And then the other is that, you know, like, again, it has to do with trust, and you have to build that up over the years. It can't just be, I know him and he was a friend, you know, and we never did anything financially together. So I'm just going to jump into a partnership with him.
Right. Trust must be earned. In other words, they've actually done things to make you trust them. Not that you like them, so you trust them because you like them.
And you guys, I think a big component of your success is that you guys built that trust before you got in business.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's great. Well, hey, if anyone's traveling to Providence and they're looking for a place to stay, what's the best way for someone to find you guys online?
Oh, we'd love that. And we'd love to host fellow investors. Providencehostel.com. That is our website. And we've sometimes had actually fellow real estate investors stay with us. So we share stories of each other's experiences. Mm-hmm. We love that.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely going to look you guys up the next time I'm in Providence. It sounds like a fun place to stay.
Thank you kindly. It was fun chatting with you.
If you want to look up Alina and Joe's website, I've got a link to it on my website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode192. Before we wrap things up, I just want to give another thank you to our sponsor today, Ridge Lending Group. If you are looking to finance a rental property, whether it's your very first property or you've got 100 properties and you're having a lot of trouble trying to find financing, Jaylee can help you. She's got many different loan programs. She can help you buy a property with as little as 15% down, and she virtually has no limit on the number of properties that she can finance for you. If you want to find out more, just go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's RIDGE lendinggroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she'll even waive all of the pre-qualification fees. Chailey's NMLS number is 42056. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. My name is Dan Lane, and I'll see you next Tuesday. This has been the Rental Income Podcast.
Some people might say coffee doesn't need chocolate, but you're not some people. You're a dreamer. You see the possibilities of chocolate and caramel flavors swirling together with cold brew, topped with velvety chocolate cold foam and cocoa caramel crumbles. That imagination can only be rewarded with Dunkin's new caramel chocolate cold brew. It's a cold brew dream come true. America runs on Dunkin'. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.